From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in June of 2019, almost 18 months ago. On this program, it was the afternoon of the first Democratic debate, Democratic presidential primary debate. There were so many candidates, we had to lay them all out for listeners and some that you've never heard of or probably never heard of since. And there was a lot of debate in the party about what kind of candidate could connect with American voters and could win the election. Well, on that program, on that day, Elaine Spall, member of Rochester City Council at the time and executive director of the Center for Youth, she was responding to a lot of talk in the room about Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, maybe Cory Booker, maybe Kamala Harris. And she said it was going to have to be Joe Biden. And the response from the people in the room that day, it sounded like Jerry Seinfeld. Elaine, come on, Elaine. Elaine. No way, Elaine, no. Well, Elaine Spall was right. I told her that day, if you're right and he wins, you can come back on the program and tell everybody I told you so. So I'm going to give her that chance. But we're going to do more than that this hour because I want to get you updated before we bring in our guests here. We don't have a formal call, but I wouldn't say this if we weren't already here. But the election is essentially over. Pennsylvania is going to go to Joe Biden's column. It's been called by Decision Desk headquarters, which has been a nonpartisan group observing the election. No one else has called it yet, but Biden is leading it. He's only going to pick up votes from the rest of the mail-in votes and the provisional ballots. He will win Pennsylvania. It'll be comfortable enough that it won't be, you know, a razor's edge. And that will be enough for the presidency. It now looks like he will, in fact, hold Arizona. President Trump would have to win more than 60% of the outstanding ballots in Arizona. A big dump of ballots just came in from Maricopa County, and the president didn't win enough. So the track in Arizona is that Joe Biden should hold on. Nevada's votes coming in today. Not all of them, but enough to say that their main state election guru, John Ralston, says it's over. Stick a fork in Nevada, Joe Biden will win it. And you probably know that overnight, the counting from Georgia put Joe Biden in the lead. When all of the votes besides the overseas military and provisional ballots are counted, Joe Biden will lead Georgia by about 3,000 or 4,000 votes. A remarkable, remarkable story there. Now, what about the votes outstanding? There's about 9,000. But consider this. Those are overseas military and otherwise provisional. It's not clear if all those 9,000 are coming in, and it's probably not that 9,000. It's probably a much smaller number. It's probably not enough, observers in Georgia say, to flip Georgia back to the president. So it looks like Joe Biden will end up with something like 306 electoral votes, which would be exactly what Donald Trump got 4 years ago. Pretty remarkable. Joe Biden is likely to address the nation tonight. That's what his aides have been telling various reporters. That's not definite. And we don't know when calls will be made formally. We know there's a lot of lawsuits out there. Most of them have been utterly without merit. Most of the theories that you're hearing about vote stealing are without merit. I don't say this in a partisan way. I say this in a way that we need to protect the integrity of this institution. We need to say as a country that whoever won this election fair and square needs to be in the office, whether that was Donald Trump or Joe Biden. Well, we've got a picture of that now. And this has to move forward because, first of all, people could get hurt or killed. And second of all, trust in institutions matter. We had a pandemic election, and we should be grateful to the elections commissioners all over the country, Republican, Democrat, the volunteers, those who've counted the votes, those who've barely slept. What a story in this country. Wasn't a great week for Democrats across the board. They'll consider it a great week for winning the presidency back, but they lost seats in Congress. We're going to talk about that. They're going to have a battle in Georgia to try to flip the Senate, but they didn't get as much in the Senate as they wanted. So there's a lot of stories to pick up. But let's start with the I told you so, and I'm going to bring in Elaine Spall, the executive director of the Center for Youth. Go ahead. Go ahead, Elaine.
Evan, I am not going to gloat. First of all, I have my phone on speakerphone because I'm with a bunch of people here. My husband and I decided we would take the day off. Who knew it would be a beautiful Saturday, a Sunday, Friday. I don't know what day it is.
It's a Friday.
And with my friend Kathy looking over Skinny Atlas Slate. So I am not going to gloat. I'm going to tell you, though, that those young ones who were on with me who scoffed at me.
You're going to hear some of them. You're careful. Be careful.
I know. I love Nicole. And by the way, let me just say quickly, I love Jeff Reese. Jeff Reese has been my friend. He once worked for me. I adore that young man.
Wasn't that a great story?
I am so happy. He and Pamela, of course, I'm connected to their family and Amy and their kids, and I couldn't be happier. So that was the way I sort of got myself ready. Listen, this was about going old school, and I know they made fun. You know, I'm okay about people making fun of me, and then I'm right. So I knew, honestly, in my soul, that what we needed was old school wisdom, thoughtfulness, caution. It was not the time to take a risk. You know, we had a job to do, and the job had to be done the way it was done by someone.
No filibustering yet. Hold on. I'm going to actually play the tape so you can gloat, but hold on. I got to bring in our other guests here. And yes, okay. political strategist Nicole Hushleray is here. We're not just talking about your prediction or your call, by the way. There's a lot to talk about going forward because progressives have a lot of work to do if they want to cut back into the Senate, if they want to expand the House in 2 years, which is always hard to do when you hold the White House. And Nicole's here. She's got experience on a wide range of campaigns and issues. Nicole, welcome back. Thanks for making time for the program.
Excited to be back. Thanks for having me.
See, Elaine, that's how you do it. You just say thank you and we move on here. No filibuster.
We've got a lot to talk about.
I know.
It's short and sweet.
Hi, Nicole. Hi, sweetheart.
Hey, Elaine.
Larry Knox is a political coordinator for 1199 SEIU, and he is with us as well. He's a veteran on a lot of different campaigns as well. Hi, Larry. Thanks for being back with us.
Thank you. Good to have this conversation.
Hey, Larry.
I do just want to play the tape for you because this was June 2019, and what Elaine Spall was saying coming into this was we have to look at what we lost. We didn't turn out enough voters, and we didn't win the states that could be flipped. Let's listen.
We did not vote. We've got to get the vote. And guess what? Forget about all those other states. You got to go to
Hillary
Michigan.
Didn't Clinton get more votes than Barack Obama?
She did, but she didn't get enough.
Well,
she didn't get enough in places. She won the popular vote. We got to get everything. We got to wrap it all up. I'm going to tell you that I still think –
Just say it, Elaine.
I know. I don't love him in terms of being inspired, but I think he is probably the safest bet.
You think it has to be Biden?
I think right now it has to be Biden. Let me tell you about misogyny in this country. Kamala Harris is amazing. Is she going to win? I don't know.
Okay, so last chance, and then we're going to move on. But at that moment, you did feel like the safe choice was the wise choice. Elaine, looking back now, assuming nothing crazy happens, Joe Biden will be the president. Would other Democrats have won, or do you think he was the one who could have won?
I think he was, and you know, I said, if you hear me say in the background, please go get Michigan, and that was the breakthrough, honestly.
Yep.
I wish that I could tell you that I thought Corey or Kamala or all these amazing new faces, and not so new, but newer than Biden, would have done. I don't think so. Evan, it's too close. Look at what happened. Look how close, you know, the states that he turned. You know, we have to give Stacey Abrams, and I know Nicole will talk about this in terms of strategy. We have to give Stacey some play and some props around Georgia. But I don't know if it would have happened in Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania. I don't think we would have gotten those states except for Joe. Now, that's just me, and I'm not trying to be right. I'm actually just wanting to – now we're positioned for real greatness. We got a lot of work to do.
Okay.
I am no longer elected, as you know, but that doesn't mean I'm not going to be fierce and run others' campaigns. So, yeah.
Okay. Nicole Hushleray, looking back here, do you think any other of the Democrats that were running at the time in 2019 could have won this election this week?
I do. And I don't want to spend too much time on that. You know, there's a lot to unpack in the postmortem. I'm much more concerned with looking forward, but I think it's almost a little blind of us to keep playing this game of defense versus offense, to keep siding with the side of being less bold and more careful, because look what it's done to us nationally. Right. I mean, we lost seats in the House that we gained in 18. And frankly, I think that's due to a disenfranchising of the very people who saved all of our asses this week. Right. Black women and young voters. And maybe it's time we start listening to them a little bit more. I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm almost ashamed of how shocked I was that it was even as close as it was. I think the matter of us slipping through is less of a testament to Joe Biden as a candidate and more of a testament to who Donald Trump is.
Okay. And we're going to talk about some of those issues that Nicole thinks that Democrats can play offense on coming up here. Larry Knox, how do you feel looking at this election? Would any of the other Democrats have won?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think possibly. I mean, personally, my union, we endorse Biden. You know, personally, my first, you know, choice would have been Sanders. But I think, you know, Biden as of the, you know, being the face of change that needs to be changed. But I think the issue set and the reason, especially, you know, among young people and black women that were supporting him and pushing him, especially in Georgia and other places, it was a different issue set that than Joe Biden was running on when he announced, you know, last year.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the issues that Sanders was pushing, the things that a lot of the other candidates were talking about, the Black Lives Matter movement, all of that is why people were voting. Biden happened to be the candidate that was better on that than Trump. And he's the one that got through the primary, because those voters in South Carolina saw him as most electable. But the issues that they believed in was closer to the more progressive candidates. So they wanted somebody that was winnable.
Right.
I think Joe won. You know, I'm glad the vice president's in there, but he didn't win like off some centrist. You know, the people voting weren't voting for him to be centrist and to the right of the center. I mean, it's obvious they were voting for him to be more progressive and more liberal than he was when he announced.
So let's talk about some of the issues then going forward here, because there's some interesting dynamics.
Could I just add one very, very quick
thing? Of course, Elaine.
It doesn't mean, and I'm with you guys, I am shocked at the turnout for Trump to get this. It means it couldn't have been. I love what Larry did. He pushed left. It doesn't mean he couldn't push left, but we had to have somebody who was at least willing to do that, to be. He doesn't need to be who he is forever. He just needed to get us to a place where Nicole's thinking, Larry's thinking, some of the other progressive young thinking. And by the way, I'm old, but young thinking. So let's put that out there. We now have someone, and Kamala's there. So he did listen to the voices that Nicole is talking about. And I do give Stacey Abrams and young people like that so much. I mean, it was women. Remember, a lot of women who stood up and they were going to get this bad, and some of them almost threw up. But that's okay.
Well,
I want you to know, I'm not saying he's perfect, but what I said then 18 months ago was we got to get here. Now the work starts.
All right.
And I'm with you. So, I'm with you guys.
So let's talk about, there's maybe some tension in the party about what that work should look like or where it goes. Elaine, by the way, your phone's a little in and out. I know you're a little farther afield, but maybe we can kind of make sure that connection works. I'm going to try to kind of lay out a little bit of the landscape on some of these issues that the party could be working on, and then I'm going to let our guests kind of take it where they want to take it. But let me kind of go ahead with a couple of things here. First of all, in Florida, yes, Donald Trump won Florida. But Florida also passed a $15 minimum wage. Fox News ran polls, and you know they've been polling the presidency, but they've been also polling issues. Fox News poll this week, Fox News, not MSNBC, Fox News, 71% said that they wanted essentially universal health care. Health care as a right, or health care for all Americans, 71%. And now I'm seeing on the Matt Skidmore show, Andrew Yang said Democrats need to improve their appeal to the working class again. He said, quote, in their minds, the Democratic Party unfortunately has taken on this role of the coastal urban elites who are more concerned about policing various cultural issues than improving their way of life, end quote. And from the New York Times, on Wednesday, congressional Democrats held a conference call that became heated. Some members complained that they nearly lost what should have been comfortable races, and they blamed cultural issues. At the top of the list was defunding police, which some Democrats on the call described as poisonous politics that their own voters rejected, to say nothing of conservative and independent voters. They demanded that the party steer away from cultural issues and back to the issues of working people and economic inequality, end quote. There's a little bit of a sort of the sampling of where the party is kind of debating on where to go or how to get there, what issues to maybe attack or be more aggressive on. So let's talk about this. Nicole Hushlerae, what's on the top of your list for what you want to see the party do?
I think we need to start listening to the people that are carrying us over the finish line and that be less reactionary. I mean, it's shocking to me that there are some members of leadership, and although I'm arguably a part of the establishment, I would go as far as saying I'm shocked at how some members of the establishment have the audacity to, with what happened nationally, right? We can all take a sigh of relief that Joe Biden is going to be the next president of the United States. But, I mean, even some of the top strategists in this country are shocked at what we saw in terms of losing ground versus gaining it. And I think we really risk disenfranchising the very people that have been saving our democracy by not listening to them more. It's not about creating a place for the Stacey Abrams of the world. She's created it for herself, right? She's created her own table. And that is something that women, and primarily Black women, do very well. But, you know, we should pause and think about the number of Black and brown voters that increased in terms of support for Trump and why that would be happening. And, you know, I see it on a local level. I've seen it on the state level. And I think this might be a testament on the national level to what can happen when we disenfranchise those folks. Right. And look, I was just as angry as the next Democrat who, you know, after Joe won the primary, hearing folks, you know, some Bernie supporters, some Elizabeth Warren supporters saying they're not going to support him, and the sort of saltiness there, because it's like, look, guys, democracy is at stake. But how many times are we going to go around the mulberry bush doing the same old before we actually learn from our mistakes? And I think it's time that we start acting like the big party tent that we say we are. We can't just talk the talk. We have to walk the walk.
Larry Knox, how do you see the issues that Democrats need to be focused on?
Yeah, it's issues that the country needs to be focused on, not just Democrats. I mean, I guess, you know, the first one isn't not even new, but something that kind of came up is voter disenfranchisement, voter suppression. The fact that, you know, the difficulty that many people had voting in this election, that's a reoccurrence of that was obvious, you know, just from seeing what was going on in Florida with the felons having to pay a poll tax, and, you know, in Georgia still people being knocked off that shouldn't have been knocked off. But yeah, it's not easy being right, because you're going to get opposition. And the fact that, you know, Biden has almost 74 million votes, Trump has 69 million. That's still scary that he got that many votes. And those Democrats that are complaining about, hey, we were talking about these issues that are tough for us in our district, stop talking about them. Yeah, they're tough, but the issues are ones that need to be talked about and addressed. So just because it's tough doesn't mean, oh God, you know, I'm in a 55% Republican, 45% Democrat district. I won it because I acted as a moderate and didn't say much, and now people want to talk about, you know, defunding the police and Black Lives Matter and income inequality, and that doesn't go well over in my district. Yeah, but it's the right issue to talk about. It's the right thing. It's something that needs to be addressed and changed. The people that are voting for your leadership in Congress, especially with Nancy Pelosi being leader because of the Black and brown folk that have won seats, those are things that have to be addressed. The presidency of this country. Yeah, there's a lot of people that didn't want to talk about those issues, but those are things that need to be addressed, you know. So I think it's easy to talk about, hey, everybody, you know, we have free education for high school and middle school and elementary. That's not controversial anymore. Right. But other stuff that's controversial that needs to be addressed, from police brutality to economic inequality to, you know, union rights and being able to organize and protection, you know, family, the time off to take care of your family. All those things that are important issues that may be difficult to talk about in certain parts of the country, even when they poll well, you know, in those parts of the country, it's not an excuse to say, you know, we can't talk about those things because it hurts us at election time.
Okay.
Well, can I just piggyback on that real quick?
Yeah, please.
Statistically, we have the evidence, and there's plenty of it even just in right this week, but certainly in years previous, which is why I'm so, you know, frustrated to a certain extent. Statistically, there's proof that running in a difficult district or a rural district for a Democrat, it does not help them to run as a centrist. It does not help them to run as more of a moderate. Nowadays, that does work for members of the GOP, and that's how a lot of them slid by. But it's people want boldness. People want action, right? That's a part of something that Trump and his supporters do so well, is they lean into who they are. They own it. And although it is shocking to a lot of us, and there's so much to be psychoanalyzed and worked through, you know, we have a lot of hard work to do beyond winning the presidency, just in unpacking this culturally and unpacking this as a society and in unpacking the whiteness that we have to, frankly, combat. Particularly, you know, obviously, I'm very ashamed to be, I'm going to say it, a white woman right now. I really am. And I think on NPR yesterday, a strategist really, really worded it well. We failed at doing the same things that the National Democratic Party tends to fail at, which is having succinct messaging on a national level, but communicating with those rural voters. And, you know, I think that goes back to that necessity of playing more offense than defense. And look, it's working for the other side. And these folks, Trump supporters, they're not going away, right? So I'm not suggesting we pander to them. I'm suggesting that we communicate better and more efficiently with people like women rural voters, because, you know, not only was there not that succinct messaging, there was no investment in some of these districts that were frankly flippable because of having the right candidate, but also just it was a matter of tying some of these Republicans to Donald Trump. And you know, last time we kind of failed at the messaging in terms of being succinct, there was little to no communication with these voters this time around. And that's less of a statement to Biden's campaign than it is to organizations like the DCCC.
Well, okay, but let me just say to listeners who are waiting, if you're on the phone, we're going to take phone calls in our second half hour for our guests. I've got one more quick follow-up for Nicole. I want to get Elaine's thought on this, too. You know, Nicole, you point out more rural voters didn't connect very well with Democratic messaging. Look at this stat. The 50 most populous counties in the country 4 years ago, Hillary Clinton won 46 of the 50 most populous counties in the country. This year, Joe Biden appears to have won 49 out of 50 of the most populous counties in the country. Only Suffolk on Long Island goes to Donald Trump. This is a really split country, rurally and closer to urban centers. And, you know, so I understand there's going to be some cultural differences, but I do wonder, Nicole, do you agree with the congressional Democrats who were railing on that call on Wednesday, according to the New York Times, saying that the party needs to get back to working class issues and get away from cultural issues, especially defund the police and others, which they thought dragged them down?
So I think that is a misconception, particularly among white establishment Democrats. They are not separate issues. Right. The cultural or social issues, as we want to put them in their own boxes, like the Black Lives Matter movement. It's all interconnected. Right. Institutional racism. It's all interconnected. We know that when you invest in Black and brown communities, when you invest in the most marginalized communities, they do the work themselves. Right. They're already doing the work themselves. And for us to act as if the economy is a separate issue from that it's a cultural misconception, right? It's a deep-seated social conditioning. But we can't act as if they're two separate. I think that's something that and I've learned a tremendous amount myself just in the last year. I think a lot of us are just waking up to what Black and brown communities have known all along, and we just haven't been listening.
Okay. Elaine Spall, what do you agree or disagree with what you just heard there?
Well, thanks. You know, first of all, for years, both as my own campaigns were going and others, I always said to people, don't move to the middle. Don't move to the middle. They're never going to love us. Don't move to the middle. Stay left, stay left, stay progressive. And that was really a very successful thing for me and others. So I do believe that moving to the middle is not the answer. Economic parity, I have the benefit of working at a place whom the work every single day is watching brown and black families struggle with homelessness, with disenfranchisement. I'm so blessed because my voice now can be focused completely, not in a political way, but in a social justice way. And Nicole is absolutely right. If we try to separate these issues, we cannot separate these issues. When I have my young staff members say to me, Lane, I got to the scene and the young man's body that we had been working with at Edison for years is still there. That's real stuff. So I have a way, my listening ears are bigger. You know, I like to talk. You guys know that. But I am listening to voices that have been ignored, the stories of our young people. So I am in a new place. I mean, I got through this election, I pray. We'll know soon. And now the work begins. And Nicole, you and I have to meet and chat and get back together. Larry, I've always loved you and have appreciated your support. But here's the thing. We have work to do, and it has to do with economic parity because it's all linked. Structural racism is clearly the reason that our black and brown families, even professional women of color, still don't have what they need. So, you know, let's not pretend we solved everything today. Let's not pretend we're done. And that's why I'm not in a position to gloat. And I've had calls from my Republican friends and they say, well, I bet you're happy. Well, I'm not. I'm happy, yes. But I'm also, like Nicole, looking at the numbers of people who voted for Trump and what that means for our country. So I'm ready to do work in a very different, not political sense, but social justice. And the work has to start now. And we are not there. And we should not move to the middle. We should keep at this. So, you know, I was right 18 months ago, but it doesn't mean much if we don't move exactly in the right directions. My colleagues and friends and all of us need to move in now.
We're going to get your phone calls, and I'll start with Jim in Rochester after the break. Listeners, if you want to join the program, it's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Email us, connections@WXXI.org. Our guests include Elaine Spall, Nicole Hushlerae, Larry Knox, talking from their perspectives about what we've seen this week and where at least the Democratic Party, but the country, can go next to address issues that have divided Americans and maybe in many ways, issues that Americans feel like political leaders have ignored or not handled very, very well. This is an afternoon in which we expect at some point a formal call for Joe Biden as president-elect of the United States. That formal call has not been made by the AP yet. It has only really been made by one organization that's tracking politics and making calls. It's called Decision Desk HQ, a nonpartisan observer. But we'll let you know if and when that happens. The reason that it looks like it's going to be today is because Joe Biden is leading in Pennsylvania. His lead grows with every count that comes in. Looks like it's going to be tens of thousands of votes and comfortable enough to call that state without a problem. He's now leading in Georgia. It's very, very close there. He's hanging on to a lead in Arizona. Doesn't look like the president's on pace to overcome him there. And it looks like he's comfortably leading once again in Nevada. So Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are on track to be president and vice president-elect. The word is that Joe Biden will address the nation at some point tonight, but we don't have formal confirmation of that. You'll hear, instead of Science Friday, as usual, at 2 p.m., you're going to be hearing Here and Now special coverage for breaking developments and the very, very latest on where the counts are in all of those states and what we're hearing from the parties and leadership. So a lot to take in there. Let's take our only break, and we're right back with you next on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on The Next Connections, where do we go next with the future of polling in this country? Well, what we saw with polling in the last week is kind of confusing. Nailed it in some states, way off in others, and in most cases, Joe Biden's best was performing where the polls said he would. And Donald Trump's best, he way outperformed the polls. What did we learn? And is there a way to fix polling going forward? Let's talk Monday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and Jim in Rochester has been waiting. First up on the phones. Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, hi. My question is for whoever would like to take it. Maybe I'm concerned about Biden. I mean, he represents the old white establishment, but we do have Kamala Harris in there. So I'm a little thankful that she could get the progressive liberal agenda going. But Ms. Hushlerae said that she needs to reach out to Trump supporters. And I agree with that. I spoke to a Trump supporter, a good friend of mine, last night. We spoke for about 45 minutes on the phone, probably haven't talked in a few months. And he made a very compelling case that, you know, we do need to unite as a country. But, you know, on their side of the aisle, as a Trump supporter, you know, they feel that, you know, over the past 4 years, you know, there's been a lot of media consternation against them. They had the whole Russia scandal. They had the impeachment scandal. They've had a lot of, you know, negativity drawn their way, as, you know, people call him a racist or people call him, you know, negative names. And, you know, he's an American too. So I sort of felt his point. I understood that. So I do want to reach out to, you know, all people, especially Trump supporters at this time, because, you know, there was a lot of irregularities when it came to the Russia investigation. I mean, there was a dossier that was created by Hillary Clinton. The FBI did use that to get warrants and spy on the candidate. There was a lot of things, you know, he made a compelling case. And I'm just worried now, are the Trump supporters going to accept the results of this election? I mean, Trump was winning at 10:30 at night, he said, and then all of a sudden the polls changed and, you know, everything stopped, went to a full pause. Now he's claiming that they put in secret ballots in the middle of the night and every day on all these ballots coming in.
My concern is, are
the Trump supporters going to take this?
Yeah, but I appreciate that, Jim. I got to say one thing about that before I kick to Larry Knox. Everything Jim's saying are things the president has alleged. None of it is true. Now, if they want to create any or show, maybe very careful, if they want to come forward with any evidence of widespread fraud, they are welcome to do so. It has not happened. It is not happening. What's happening is exactly what should be happening, especially during a pandemic election. A careful, methodical, systemically accurate, and bipartisan counting of the vote across the country. It's a beautiful thing. And we should be appreciative of it, no matter what the result is, at least because it means the institution is working. Now, I want to just be – we have to be very careful about this because the caller's right. Jim's right. The president's supporters believe it, and you don't have to go far to find it. They may want to call the show. That's fine. But you'll find it on social media. You'll find it when you talk to your relatives. I've heard it for the last 48 hours that the Biden crime family is rigging this thing. That's not happening. But it's a dangerous moment. So let's be careful with that. And then I know Larry wants to jump in on some of the other points there first. Go ahead, Larry.
Yeah, I think it's important that, yeah, for Trump supporters, you know, Biden said he must be the president for all Americans. You know, he's not going to be president just for Republicans or just for Democrats. But, you know, and if you are a Trump supporter because you want things to be better for you and your family, Biden's going to work for that. But if you're a Trump supporter because you, you know, supported putting kids in cages or the way that Trump has acted, you know, to our allies or the way he handled the COVID crisis or feel, you know, it's overstated or a hoax, or those are things that, yeah, those are things that we're the country and Americans don't support and don't want anymore. And those are things that there is no middle ground or conversation on. And regards to, like, you know, who, you know, who's going to be in the White House, who's, Biden is one person. It's really, if you're not electing a president, really, you're electing everybody who he brings in with him. And Biden will bring in people that are a lot more representative of the country. And I think also a lot more left and progressive than he was when he announced for president. And as a Trump supporter, you kind of have to look back, especially if you're, you know, not a racist Trump supporter, because they're not all racist. But if you really were okay with voting for somebody in spite of all that, I think that's something you have to look at for yourself. But also look at who he brought with him, you know, Trump. Pretty much three quarters of his upper campaign staff, you know, for his campaign are either indicted or on their way to jail or in jail. That's a lot, obviously. Steve Bannon, I don't know if you covered this already early in the newscast, but Steve Bannon, his chief advisor during his campaign, worked for him in the White House for, I think, over a year. Yesterday, and this is not just Democrat problem, this is un-American, yesterday said that Dr. Fauci and I think Dr. Burke's head should be on pikes outside of the White House as a warning to the other federal government workers to get in line. He said that on YouTube live. That's the kind of person that supports Trump. That's the kind of person that worked for Trump. That's the kind of person that Trump listens to. That's the kind of person that he had working for him on your dime in the White House. That is stuff that has to be gone, disappeared, buried, never let up again in our country, separate from, you know, how much you want the tax rate to change or, you know, other things that are poor issues. That kind of stuff something that would tear apart our country. Our country is as imperfect as it is. You know, when I listened to Doc Rivers, the Boston Clippers coach, I can't remember where he was, but he talked about loving a country that didn't love him back as a black man. And me, the same here, feeling that same way. That kind of stuff is beyond the pale. And Trump pretty much letting many of these racists take off their masks and refuse to put on masks and take off their hoods. We have to get back to a point in the country where that's not even, that should be back, hidden, buried, put away, not something that is in the White House, full display for the rest of the world to see. That's where we are first, and then moving on to addressing these other things. So for Trump supporters, if that's where you were, you know, outside, you know, your MAGA hat, you know, trying to stop votes from happening and going to conspiracy theorists and those kind of things, yeah, there's no place for you in government and in the White House. If there's stuff that you want to address as a person and you thought Trump would do it and you see that he hasn't, give, you know, the president a chance, or president-elect a chance to do that.
Nicole, can you reach Trump voters with certain messages? Go ahead.
I mean, to be fair, I don't think we've tried, right? We know we didn't do it in 16. We definitely didn't do it this time around. But I'm also kind of at a point of acceptance. I mean, still shocked, right, that as many people and saddened. I think, you know, I didn't get out of bed on Wednesday until like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And that was knowing that we were on a better track for Biden's victory, but still incredibly disheartened by how close it was, right, and by the number of people that were still supporting him. So I think Larry is absolutely right. We start by bringing integrity and truth and information versus disinformation back to the White House and starting to address, you know, how we've failed in the last 4 years to make sure that countries like Russia aren't meddling with our elections, you know, in terms of regulating the web and social media. But it was the perfect storm, right? These rural communities, most of which don't have access to broadband, don't have access to information besides a very limited and intentionally targeted information source that is skewed, right, and full of misinformation. We have to address that first and foremost, but we can't get comfortable and say, oh, phew, it's over with. He's gone. You know, the work is done, and those people will either be with us or not later. I'm less concerned about getting them with us and seeing what happens when they are communicated with, have more access to information. But at the end of the day, you know, also to highlight what Larry was saying, tolerating racism is racism. And we have a very, no pun intended, black and white way that we look at racism. You are either a racist or you are not. You are either bad or you are good. And I got a lot of heat in 16 for making a social media post as a town councilwoman saying, you might not be a bigot because you voted for Donald Trump, but you're saying it's okay. And I had several members of the Democratic establishment reach out to me and really shame me for saying that. But the fact of the matter is, it's true. And the more we try to pretend that it's not true, the more we're going to set ourselves back and not make the progress that, frankly, everyone, the black and brown communities, the more rural communities, I mean, we were curious as to why a lot of rural voters vote against their own self-interest. They don't even know they're doing it, right? They don't have access to information. They don't have access to quality education. And I mean, at the end of the day, all I can say is it is not going to happen in 2 years. It's not going to happen in 4 years. We're talking about, you know, one of the silver linings Donald Trump brought about is maybe now we can finally face the racism that many of us were too comfortable to face that still exists, right? The institutions that are upholding it, the systemic poverty that perpetuates it. It's going to take, in my opinion, a generation to really dismantle it culturally and to have those day-to-day conversations in our 9-to-5 universes where, you know, oh, I really don't feel like talking to my uncle who makes racist comments here and there. No, we have to start doing it. And it is up to them to do their hard work as an individual. But we are saying it is unacceptable publicly and culturally.
All right. Elaine Spall.
Thank you. You know, a couple of times Nicole has talked about shame, and I just want to say a little bit about shame. Shame has no place now for anybody and anything. I mean, we can personally feel whatever we want to feel, and Nicole, I appreciate you feeling ways, but the shame that we could now put onto those who don't agree with us, we have to do what I do with a two-year-old grandchild, a centrifuge staff, or an elderly constituent I'm still taking care of. What do you want? What is the end game? So from a Trump supporter's perspective, what is it that you're worried about, not so sure about? We have to talk to each other. You know, this is very, everything is relational. I mean, we do a lot of restorative practice work in the world I live in. Why? Because we sit around and we sit in a circle, by the way, which we don't do with those we don't agree with, right? Because we don't want to look at them. We have to look at each other in the face, in the eyes, with respect, get rid of who we think is smarter, better, whatever, and talk to each other. We do have so much more in common. And that's my fear, that we're now going to even be more polarized. There are people who feel very, very, very frightened about Kamala. I've heard, I know people who say, oh my gosh, he's going to die. She's going to be our president. What are we going to do? I mean, they actually have fears put out there with no reason, but it's real for them. So how do we honor that, respect that, and listen? It's hard. It's hard. I have been in rooms people thought the way I did and who didn't, and didn't know whether to get up and leave, finish my lunch, or just stop talking. And Nicole's right. I mean, we stop talking. Well, I'm not going to talk about it. We have to talk about it. And Evan, now we have to talk about it. The other thing is we're going to have a change in the Attorney General. I mean, we have had issues not just with the president, but with those who he has surrounded himself with, some of them not good public servants. So I'm also hopeful about some of the auxiliary changes that may come. So, you know, I'm ready to talk to people who don't agree with me. I'm ready to sit with people who I think want to strategize something else, but we've got to listen and stop vilifying those for whom, as Nicole said, some they just don't have the information, yeah, or they haven't they're listening to something.
Yeah,
how do we get to that? How do we get to that, Evan?
Well, and let me grab a phone call from someone on that subject. It's Preston calling in Rochester. Go ahead, Preston.
Oh boy, hey, well, thank you so much. By the way, I love your show.
Thanks.
So I should probably give a little context here. So this is like the first year that in my entire life that I've ever been meaningfully involved politically. And it was just really to preserve my own mental health. So I took actually a week's worth of vacation and was focusing on phone banking for campaigns in Michigan, Florida, Arizona, and North Carolina. And so it just was, it was really an energizing experience. The comment I wanted to, so I say that because I am politically pretty ignorant, okay? So I've never been active, but this year I just had to. I just had to keep my sanity. But one thing I wanted to mention, and I grew up in a rural area, okay? There were 13 people in my graduating class.
Hmm.
And when I hear things like what I think one of your speakers, Nicole, mentioned about being, you know, ashamed of being a white woman, I want to speak to language, I guess is what I throw out there. That is so important because that is very alienating in rural communities. And when we need to really be mindful of how things like defunding the police, like ashamed of being white, that is, you'll never connect with folks like where I grew up, okay, down in Allegheny County. You just won't do that. And to Elaine's point earlier, I mean, I do agree that Joe Biden had to be the candidate. You know, Bernie Sanders, that would also, as much as I, you know, really admired his honesty and so much of what he stands for, but that kind of a candidate is also very alienating to rural areas. You know, he would have lost so many people that would have been in those critical states, you know, like Michigan. I mean, North Carolina is not looking good, which I feel bad because that was where I spent most of my energy, but it was a great team there. And, so anyways, I just throw that out for whatever it's worth. I hope it, makes some sense.
Well, Preston, let me. Yeah, thank you, and I'll let our guest respond. I'm going to let Nicole respond first because he brought her up specifically. I know Larry wants to jump in too, but Preston, I appreciate it, and I appreciate you telling the story of what energized you to become active. I mean, you did a lot of work for this campaign, so I just want to thank you for taking the time to share that story. Now, you mentioned some of the things that you think are alienating to voters, and I'll let Nicole Hushler-Ray respond. Go ahead, Nicole.
Yeah, well, first, Preston, thank you. Thank you so much, regardless of what the reasons were. You know, thank you for getting involved. I'll be honest, frankly, at least once a year I say I'm done with politics, and usually it's to preserve my own mental health and frankly, because there's just too much work to be done that I end up sticking around. Another silver lining from Trump's presidency is I hope and pray that we have a level of engagement nationwide that isn't going away. People are awake to the importance of being involved, but also, you know, understanding that everything is political, right? If anybody wants to brush it off, we now see exactly what's at stake when we do sort of stop paying attention and not get involved in some capacity. But frankly, my comment about my own shame, I mean, that's my own personal experience as I'm confronting my own whiteness, right? As I'm learning from the Black women leaders that even locally are fighting to save our community, but certainly even on the national level as well. So I don't want to mistake what I'm saying for myself personally is, you know, I'm not going to go door to door in Steuben County and say that to give that kind of messaging to rural voters. So I just want to be very clear on that front. And I agree, you know, this does need to be, it's why it's so complicated, because we're talking about actually beginning to deconstruct institutional racism. The civil rights movement, you know, for too many in this country kind of was a period at an end of a sentence, thinking that everything would just eventually go in the direction that it needed to because of that movement, right? There was a lot of hard work that was instantly brushed under the carpet because of the amount of pain and discomfort and, you know, just day-to-day work that was going into it. I mean, that's a whole show in and of itself. We could talk about that all day. But I think we're finally here, right? I think enough of us, I think we're at a point where we see there is no going backwards. We have to start having these conversations. It is going to be uncomfortable regardless of what industry you work in, what you do for a living, your passions, where you stand on any of this. And, you know, I'll say when I got injured by the Rochester Police Department while participating in a peaceful protest in early September, I got a glimpse, you know, and I only a tiny glimpse because I'm a white woman. I'm never going to fully know what Black and brown people face every day. I was finally confronted with what they're up against in terms of institutional racism, just in local government, state government. And I always thought I was doing enough. I always thought I was doing my part. I always thought I was, you know, confronting my whiteness and on the side of racial equity, but it wasn't enough. Right. And you know, when I say ashamed also, it feels a little bit shameful that it took my own confrontation and my own, you know, it hitting close to home for me to kind of wake up on a whole nother level. So I'm not pretending that this is simple. I'm not pretending that I have all the answers. It's honestly why I now on a daily basis, I'm advocating for listening to these leaders of this movement, to listening to the Black women and the young voters and the young people involved in politics now, who, again, saved, we can say Joe Biden saved the country, but Joe Biden owes everything to those voters. And we, as a national party, have to start looking at it through that lens, not, you know, well, he was going to be our white savior. We'll never really know exactly how the election would have played out with anyone else as a candidate. I am happy that he is our next president. But, you know, there's a lot to be said about why And there's lots to unpack there alone about why we believed he was the only one who could do it, because he's an older white man.
All right, Larry Knox, we're almost out of time. Go ahead, Larry.
Yeah, before I get answered, I just want to know, there is a protective vote rally tomorrow at MLK Park. Just go online. There'll be details. We have to make sure we get Biden in. Nationwide, that's going on. But I will say also, back to what Preston has said, there is a certain amount of privilege to say, I don't want to talk about those issues or those issues that are worrisome. Like the members like me, you know, and my family, or the members of my union who are healthcare workers have literally lost their lives, put their families' lives on the line during this COVID crisis, and have to go home to communities, or their life may be on the line, depending on an encounter with the police officer that's not properly trained or should even be a police officer. They don't have the privilege or the time to not worry or address those issues. So I think there is, you know, there has to be a better sense of urgency of, oh, this is uncomfortable. Some of us don't have the time or place, energy or safety net or privilege not to worry and have these issues immediately addressed. And this is what needs to start happening. It's already happening. That's why there's people protesting the streets. That's why this has been raised up as an issue. And that's why I love that Biden won. I love that Kamala's going to be there. We're going to be on them as soon as they're sworn in and making sure they address these issues.
All right, Elaine, if you can do it in about 25 seconds, Elaine, go ahead.
25 seconds. Humility. I think Joe Biden is a humble man. I don't think that he thinks he did this alone. And by the way, no one is going to save us. We are going to save ourselves by opening our arms and healing each other and coming together. And Evan, thank you for always being the voice of reason and letting us share our thoughts. And Nicole and Larry, love you, and take care all.
Well, love you.
Thank you to the whole panel here. And boy, so many emails and phone calls, and we barely scratched the surface. These questions of divisions, of what benefits Americans, of what frankly people want that they feel like Washington isn't providing, and how to get there, we got a lot to talk about in the days and weeks and months to come. Elaine Spall, Nicole Hushleray, Larry Knox, thanks to all of you. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Listeners, you're used to Science Friday at 2 on a Friday. We're going to Here and Now for special coverage as we get closer to a final call in the presidential race. Rob Braden is the engineer. I'm Evan Dawson, Megan Mack, producer, all saying to you, have a nice weekend. I hope it's peaceful and loving wherever you are. We'll talk to you Monday.